Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Boothcast. Boothcast today is brought to you by Starboard Sup in conjunction with our media partner, Total Sup. Now, Starboard Sup has just an amazing range of boards, inflatables, foils, basically anything you need to get out on the water and have fun, work hard, and just get so much enjoyment out of the ocean and lakes, rivers, everything that you want to enjoy. They basically got the craft for you. So if you want to find out more about Starboard, please check out sup.star-board.com, and you're going to be able to get that board that you want to go out in the ocean or wherever you want to be and go and have a lot of fun. So please check them out. Now I'm going to throw you over to my interview with production manager Ollie O'Reilly from Starboard Sup.
Hello and welcome to Boothcast. On Boothcast, I speak to people who inspire me about sport, business, and the winning mindset. Today on Boothcast, I have the SUP production manager of Starboard SUP, Ollie O'Reilly. Ollie has been involved in Starboard for about 5 years now, and he's obviously helped me a lot with my race board design, but there's also a huge range of Starboard SUP that we kind of get a little bit intimidated by. I know a lot of people out there say, oh, there's so many boards, I don't know which one to choose. So Ollie's here today to not only tell us a bit about himself and his background, but also tell us how to pick that perfect SUP for you. So Ollie, thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks, Michael. Yeah, it's great to be on with you. And yeah, it's been great to watch all the different podcasts you've been doing, the interviews and hearing people's stories. So yeah, it's been great to see you over this kind of strange and uncertain times. But yeah, it's good.
It's been really great to actually talk to so many different people, and I'm so used to bouncing around the world and have my own little traveling community that I travel with. So it's nice to be able to link up with them and sort of get that bit more in depth with people and hear more about their story and where they're from, because we always talk about what's happening around us. We never talk about who the individual is. So it's nice to get those stories out there. So on that, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and where you're from and what you do?
Yep. So, I'm 29. I'm from the UK originally, from Devon, which is the southwest of England. Grew up kind of on the coastline there, which has been great. Kind of being close to the sea and the water. So yeah, I grew up there. I've been at Starboard now for, as you said, 5 years. This will be my sixth year. I moved out to Thailand in 2014. Where I started. So yeah, it's been a great journey. I got into paddleboarding kind of back in 2009, 2008, I think it was. So it's been kind of 10 years now, growing with the sport as you have. And yeah, the different opportunities that come your way has been great for me to meet so many different people.
Yeah, it's quite an incredible experience, obviously, getting involved in stand-up and in paddle sports in general. Like, I know we sort of came almost into the sport around about the same time, and we sort of worked together on those race board ranges a lot. But what was it about stand-up paddling that wanted you to get involved with it? Or was it just a job originally for you? Or was it something you're already passionate about and then you got into it?
Yeah, so I was working at a kind of summer job at a sailing school in Devon, a small town called Solcombe. So during my summers there, I'd work kind of managing the boathouse and being responsible for taking all the bookings and the safety cover, kind of operating the boats and just kind of managing the water sports side of it. So that was Hobie Cat sailing boats, kayaks, and then paddleboarding. So that came around, I think around 2008. They did, John Hibbard at the time was promoting it, and they did a kind of summer tour where they were doing different stops, and they came to Solcombe, the town I was working at, and they presented it there. Unfortunately, the Starboard distributor is very close to where I live, so that helped a lot with kind of getting on boards. And yeah, we tried it, and it was like, back then it was so new that people would kind of didn't know what it was. They thought you were strange if they saw someone standing up. So It was very new at that point, but we got a few boards at the school, and we started just paddling and kind of surfing small waves at the time on kind of the big boards. But yeah, it was different at the time, and it was super fun to kind of have a new sport to promote. So yeah, I got into it there, and then I worked at the school, and then I had to go to university, and then I really got into it again when I had a new job working at a bar and restaurant, and the owner at the time, Simon, he was into paddleboarding as well, and this restaurant was right on the water of a kind of estuary, so it was dead flat, perfect for paddleboarding. So I did a summer there working on the bar, and we kind of came to the end of the summer and both agreed that it would be amazing to have a SUP school operated from there. So that was the kind of first conversation. And then from there, we decided to set up one of the first stand-up paddleboard schools in the UK. So Simon, my partner at the time, yeah, we bought 6 boards, and then I went back to uni, and the following summer we had our first season. So that's kind of how I really got into the sport. And we started small, as I said, at that time. That was kind of 2011, 2010. It was super new. And yeah, people were just intrigued by it. There were no waves. It was just flat water paddling. And we had kind of the very first really kind of sight of the sport in that area. So we got a lot of attention, and we were lucky that we had the restaurant there, that people were kind of, they'd see us paddleboarding and then they'd be interested, and then we get more bookings. So we started there, and the school grew, and year on year we bought more boards, and as the sport kind of became more popular and well known, we were part of that building. So that's how I first got into the sport of paddleboarding.
Yeah, and that's a pretty cool story. Obviously just got into it like kind of like generically, like most of us. I sort of saw it as a different avenue to explore paddle sports in general, and you sort of were obviously in that industry already, and you sort of saw this new sport get involved with, and you jumped at the opportunity. So how did that involve Starboard? Obviously originally you were buying boards from Starboard, but how did you actually get involved in being a product manager for Starboard?
Yeah, so as I said, I ran the school. My school is called Waterborne. It still runs today. It's one of the kind of biggest in the UK. And so in the UK, as you probably know, it's quite seasonal. So in the winter, it would be, we'd kind of have to shut down and kind of stop business just because of the cold weather. So after I finished university, I went traveling with a friend of mine from home, and we did 6 months, and we started in Southeast Asia. So we flew to Thailand. And then we did a bit of a tour through kind of Cambodia, Vietnam, Laos, then Australia, and then Canada and New Zealand. And so obviously being a part of kind of knowing the UK distributor for Starboard, I had some connections. And before I left, they actually kind of gave me Sven's email. So I contacted Sven on email, and just kind of, I didn't know if I'd get a reply or, and then I arranged to kind of come over and see him. And actually before that, I had actually attended a couple of the Starboard distributor meetings. So every year Starboard used to have a distributor meeting in Costa Brava in Spain, where they would come and present all of the new range. And as being a school in the UK, I was invited for a couple of years to go and attend that. So I'd already met Sven, but it was kind of just a brief kind of encounter. And then, I got Sven's email, and I came out to Thailand, and yeah, I kind of came to the Taco Lake at the time. I was a bit kind of, I remember very well coming into the lake at that day, and it was, I thought I was lost. I didn't know where I was. It was like kind of getting a taxi and just giving them an address and hoping I would kind of turn up. And as you know, it's until you get to the lake, kind of getting there is... you think you're in the middle of nowhere. So got there. And I hung out with Sven and Scotty McKercher at the time, and it was great. Sven gave me a tour of the whole setup here. The office at that time was quite different to what it is now, but it was, I was stoked. I was like seeing all the boards, seeing all the kind of the new boards in being shaped. Sven was giving me stuff to test straight away. So I was, it was just a day's visit, and it was great to meet the team. And from that, I wrote an article on my kind of trip, and then Sven put me in touch with different distributors. And from my traveling, I met up with Pete Cox in Australia. I did a race there with him. I met up with Jeremy Stevenson in New Zealand. So it was great just through that one trip here, Sven put me in kind of contact, and that's how I met more of the Starboard team. And then this is kind of a long story, but I'll sum it up. The following year, I obviously went back after my traveling. I ran my school for another season. And then following winter, I went out to Vietnam because a good friend of mine had asked me to come out and do some paddleboarding out there. And through that, I actually, my friend Damien, he's a footwear designer, and he managed to actually get me an internship with Puma because he was working with Puma at the time. Yeah. So I was living in Vietnam, and I was doing an internship with Puma, which was fascinating, kind of working for a big corporate company. So I was there for 6 months in Vietnam, and then again went back the following summer just to kind of run my school again and start things up. And Puma had actually given me a job offer, which I was stoked about. And I'd actually initially accepted it. The plan kind of stopped my school. But that summer, it was amazing. I had like one of the best summers. It was at a time where paddleboarding was just getting more and more popular. And I came to the end of my season after having taught so many people and just didn't want to leave the sport. And I was at a crossroads. I didn't feel confident leaving my school and the sport yet. So I kind of got in touch with Sven and explained to him my situation with kind of I have Puma on one side and my school. And I asked him if there was an opportunity with Starboard. And that's kind of how it all started. There was a position in marketing, and I started in marketing for the first year, and then moved into product, and kind of that's where I am now as product manager for the last, this is my sixth year. So it's a bit of a long one there. Sorry to go into too much kind of detail, but it was a bit of a winding route, but that's how I kind of got into Starboard.
No, it's good to hear your story. And obviously I have heard it from you before, which is good to let the listeners know, like you were obviously initially involved in product design. You were going to work for Puma, and you did have obviously your school over there in Devon, which was obviously working really well for you. And SUP became a passion for you. And then that's how you basically chose to get over to Starboard and actually get to work with toys every day and get to play with so many different things on the water, which is kind of exciting. I was talking to Sven the other day, and he was talking about how he's 57, he gets to wake up every day and he's got a new toy to play with. Like it's kind of really cool to obviously be part of that environment, and it's kind of infectious. Like, you know, and I know, like once you get over there, you sort of feel like you're part of this like big machine that's just making toys that we get to play with each and every day. And I always want the new ones as quickly as possible. And it's obviously great to work with that. But so when we're talking about like R&D, like I know a lot of that R&D with Starboard, but there's a lot of focus obviously on the race program, and then obviously you've got like the recreational stand-ups, and you've got like the touring boards, and then you've got the airlines and the inflatables. There's like such a big range, and there's a lot of R&D that goes into that. Can you tell us a little bit about the R&D process there at Starboard?
Yeah, so kind of my role as product manager is split between R&D and then production. So obviously, as you know, I work with the team riders and start from kind of initial briefs of design through to testing the development. And then eventually, once we've designed those boards, that then leads to setting up the production. So it's always managing kind of half the development side and then half then setting up everything for production and then following that through. So within Starboard, as R&D is, I think the brand is pretty clear. It's been a world leader in not just SUP, but windsurf. Obviously, there's Airrush, which is part of the group as well, for kite surfing. And so Starboard is very much a premium brand, and that explains kind of why we have such a big range, because as a premium brand, and we want to give and deliver the best performance on the water. And so that means kind of catering for all the different niches that make up paddleboarding. Paddleboarding is so accessible to people that's why there's so many different niches, such as yoga, river, racing, touring, surfing, hydrofoiling. So that's just gives a bit of an overview on why the range is like it is. But that kind of comes to the next point of R&D. Yeah, because we have such a big range, every year we'll focus on developing a new part of the range. So certain boards will have longer cycles. Other boards, like the race boards, as you know, will have kind of an annual cycle. So every year we plan to update those just to stay ahead and give the best, kind of the fastest boards, obviously making sure that the riders are happy and they know that they've got that competitive edge. So it depends on which boards we develop, kind of based on maybe a board like the Whopper. If we haven't changed that for 3 or 4 years, we'll then focus on changing, updating that range. So every year, yeah, the ranges will be different in terms of what we develop and introduce. But yeah, it starts, everything kind of starts here at the office in Thailand, in Bangkok. So we have a fairly big facility here. There's I think it's probably close to 70 of us working here in the office. And so we have a big workshop facility, which has been updated over the last couple of years. And that for SUP, I manage 5 shapers. So we have 5 shapers working every day. And that very much controls the pace of development, because we've got, once we finish one board, we've got to then start the next and refine. So that kind of fuels us to always be developing and refining and always kind of working on new projects. So to answer your question, how does it work in R&D? We always start with a brief. So we decide, first of all, based on kind of the market feedback, rider feedback, we take that into account, and then we'll put that into a brief and decide what changes we want to make on a board. So if it's a race board, for instance, we'll look at what do we need to improve, and how can we make them faster. The race boards is kind of quite black and white. It's just we have a standard of trying to make it 50 board over 50 strokes, one board length faster. So whatever we do, it's a clear benchmark against that. Other boards, such as the surfboards, it's not as easy or not as black and white. There's you have different factors, different waves, different rider abilities. So certain boards will have kind of different variables which will influence the design. So yeah, we'll start here with a brief, and then we'll look at those changes. Sometimes we use a production board. So we'll bring a board and then make those changes directly onto that board. Other times we'll shape a new board from scratch. So we'll draw a monofilm, we'll draw an outline, we'll decide the rocker, the rail templates, the bottom shape, everything, and then we'll shape it from the beginning. So it very much depends on what we're trying to achieve and kind of where that goes in some ways.
Yeah, for sure. So it sounds like it's quite an extensive process. What do you find are the hardest boards to get out into the market? Like, is it the race board? Is it the hard boards? Is it which one probably you think that you spend the most time on?
It's tricky. So obviously, on if we just look at kind of inflatables versus hard boards, naturally it's easier to make shape changes because you have the EPS foam, so you can do whatever you like to that and shape it and then laminate it. So it's very easy to change stuff. With the inflatables, we're limited in many ways to do a lot of the shape changes, just because the way they're built, obviously the technology is a bit restrictive on making shapes with a drop stitch. So although the shape changes are limited on inflatables at the minute, we do spend a lot of time on the inflatables, looking at the technology side of things and how we can bring new innovations like the airline and concepts like that, the technologies and outlines. So if we look at just shapes in general, the shapes are kind of, the race boards are probably the hardest. Like every year we make a board that's faster, and it always, then kind of the next year, like now I've signed off my O22 range, as you know, and thinking for the year after, what are we going to do? It's always a bit overwhelming because we how much work goes into making those small tweaks and getting that difference. So that's the race boards are always tricky to really kind of get that advantage every single year. And that's why we rely on you and riders such as Daniel, Connor, Trevor, everyone's involved in that to give their feedback so we can really refine from the best riders. But boards that have been hard in the past, yeah, one of them that was really hard was the Hypernut. It's a short, compact wave board range, which is it's one where if we want to make one variable, like if we want to increase the speed of it, we then lose the stability. If we want to make it more maneuverable, maybe we make it we lose speed. So you're always trying to find that balance of not changing the board so much and losing out from one side. So it's getting that balance right. And obviously the customers, the people that have bought these boards in the past, they expect a certain feel and performance from them. So it's trying to always deliver an upgrade, but not to lose that kind of characteristic of the board. So yeah, the Hypernut in the past has been a tricky one. We made kind of over 20 prototypes before we really finalized the concept on that.
And how important is it for Starboard to be the best premium brand? Like, I know there's a lot of focus on being the best at Starboard. Like, I focus on it because I wanted to be with Starboard because I knew they were the best before I even got into the sport, really. How much of an importance is that to going into those designs and going into the graphics and going into all those different avenues that you take those boards into? What is the philosophy behind that? Because we do always want to be the best.
Yeah, we do. And I think that's probably driven by one man. As you know, Sven is, he's competitive by nature, and he just has a desire to always deliver the best and bring the best quality. And that's where Starboard from the beginning set itself out to really be the best and focus on innovation and quality. And that's a real driver in the sport. And because we've been a world leader in windsurfing and now paddleboarding, once you get to that level, you obviously don't want to lose that. And that's something that we really pride ourselves is always to try and deliver the best quality, best performance. And that means, again, because we've got shapers here working every day, and we're here at the office, we can always try and improve and try and be better. Sometimes it's hard because you have a time frame, and often we'll try stuff and maybe it doesn't work, and then we have to either go back to the beginning or we'll have to modify again. And sometimes those boards can be very frustrating. Trying to always meet that at the right timeline is hard. That's one of the challenging bits. But it's just the whole crew here is focused on delivering the best performance, and the riders very much. We have a big team, and they obviously push us and motivate us. Having you guys come to the office always makes us kind of want to deliver the best for you and the customer, that we always want to try and be that best brand and have the best quality and performance on the water.
Yeah, it's definitely one thing that stands out for me when I go over time. It's always about being the best, about having the best product, about having the most user-friendly product. And what would you say would be your favorite board that you've ever had to sort of like look over and create?
In terms of technologies, I've been involved in a lot with some of the concept boards we've made in the past, which have been very much trying for materials, trying to make more sustainable eco boards. So that's always been a challenge, and kind of trying to use more natural or recycled materials and trying to obviously get the same performance. So that's a project which I've definitely enjoyed, and it's a challenge on the technology side. In terms of shapes, I suppose the SUP longboard was one of my favorite boards that we did. That was just a clear, like we tested that board. I remember in Bali, I was with Daniel and Bruno actually at the time, and we were testing those boards, and it was an epic kind of test day because we all just came off the water with big grins on our face, and it was the boards just seemed to work really well. And it was quite a different. These boards are very thin, and they stand out from most of the other boards in the range. And yeah, that one was it was just such a kind of pleasure to ride. It was so nice to turn, and it was a bit of a kind of breakthrough from my side on that one. But yeah, I suppose, as you know, we every year we're developing. Sometimes I develop over 30 shapes in a year, so it's there's always highlights every year. So I suppose, looking back over the years, the race boards, again, always trying to be faster, and that's a massive journey in a part of the sport. But even like the airline boards, some of the inflatables concepts, like when we developed the airline originally, that was a really special kind of technology, and it hadn't been done before. And I'd actually done a race after we developed it. I did a race in Italy, and it was great to finally kind of, I was using an inflatable board, and I had people on carbon boards kind of drafting behind me at one stage. So that was a cool one. But I suppose, yeah, to answer your question, there's probably not one board in particular. It's a lot of different boards that have made up. And this year we had the Waterline, which is a flat water touring board, which is really cool. It's just, there's no splash at all. It's
It's a quite incredible board, that one.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think
lots of boards for you.
Yeah, I think obviously the foil boards as well has been, the last few years has been a really real big journey, and just so much to learn, because everyone is, it still is, I suppose, kind of learning, and the sport's so new that it's such an open field, and trying all the different variables, like, as you know, the mast heights, the foils, the wings, the board shapes, like, it's just, there's so many variables that make that a challenge, but exciting at the same time. It's always trying to kind of try new concepts there. And again, a lot of stuff we try doesn't work, or some, maybe one board works and then we scale it and then we find out, it doesn't actually, it's not better than the reference board. So a lot of the time, what we develop, a lot of boards that don't go through the production, but it's the journey and the learning of that, which you find certain parts that you know, the next board we make, we'll put that in, or we'll take that away, and then that leads to it. So it's as much from kind of all the different prototypes and the journey to get to the end board that's enjoyable.
It's quite an exciting thing to be a part of. Like, I know for me originally it was the race boards, but then even you guys letting me have like sort of basically free rein on designing my own Unlimited, which was really cool. And like being able to design the steering system with Raul and yourself and working on the Unlimited, like that's one of those things I love doing. And you get to do it with so many different boards, and then testing with Tiesta with the foils, and like obviously design the boards. And then like, I've got a shipment there sitting there right now that I really want to get to Australia. It's just like that process is so much fun, and that journey is really exciting. But one point you did say just then, we do create, obviously, when we're doing the race boards, especially, we create the fast ones, I guess, what, for the elite riders and myself and guys like Connor and Daniel and Fiona and Sonny and those top riders. But then we obviously scale those boards. But we scale them first, but then we actually modify those boards to make those boards the best version of those as well. I think there's a common misconception out there that we just blow the boards up and then they all of a sudden look different. They all look a little bit different because we actually make that boards to say we've got like a 21 wide sprint or 21.5 sprint. When we scale that to say a 24.5, it's not going to be exactly the same because we make that board that little bit better on the 24.5. Can you explain that concept a little bit to the listeners?
Yeah, for sure. For boards like the race boards, obviously we want to have the best board for the top riders. So those boards have come down in widths over the years and become narrower. And yeah, those boards very much, we normally start with the smallest board in the range first, whether it's the pro surf boards or the race boards. We get your feedback and we make and sign off the smallest board. And then we start to scale. But as you said, it's not as simple as just kind of blowing them up, because every board has some tweaks. We test every single board against the reference board, so the last year's production. And it's quite a strict test program in terms of the weights of the boards make a big impact. As you know, every time we go out and test a board, we have to always make sure that they're at the right weights. So the same weight, if one board is lighter by 500 grams, then that's going to affect the result. So one of the things we always focus on is making sure the board's the same weight. And then, yeah, we always test, and you do find that maybe one board that was a smaller board worked well. And then when you go up, it isn't working as well. Maybe you have to tweak the rocker, or you have to lower the bottom shape. And obviously now we've got the belly on these boards, and maybe it's got slightly less to give it more stability for the heavier rider. So it's always trying to find that balance. And we ourselves use different riders, and we're not just focused on the top. We have a range of people here that paddle and enjoy paddling, and we ask them to try the boards and give us their feedback from complete different skills, different rider weights, because that matters a lot. And ourselves, we often, like the last couple of weeks, I was testing putting weight packs on myself and putting weights in the board just to see how the boards react on different weights. Obviously, they will sink lower in the water, and we need to know how that, for a heavier person, how that's going to feel. So, all the boards have to be tested. And it's I wish it was as simple in some ways to scale it, but it's not. And we have to find those. And again, on the surfboards, it's the same thing. Maybe the smaller board works really well, but as we scale it, for instance, the pro boards, we often have to tweak the rockers, because the longer the boards, the rocker needs to be tweaked, and you only find that out from testing and then comparing it to a reference board and tweaking as you go.
And the testing process is quite extensive. Like, sometimes it's months of testing. Like, I think it was last year's range, we were trying to create new concepts, which we're always trying to become the best, like in the race board range, especially. That's where I have to spend a lot of time. But we come over there and we're trying to test things, and sometimes it's just like awesome. Like, we look at the boards and we're like, yep, I'm going to change this, and this. Like, I raced this last season. I want to make sure that this rocker changes, or we want to try this concept, or I think what was happening here in certain races didn't really work the way that we thought it was. Let's fix it. And then sometimes we go over there and it's just like, boom, better. And then sometimes we change it and it makes it worse, or it really doesn't come through that exactly the way we think it's going to come through. How do you deal with that sort of that frustration process as well? Like, sometimes it's awesome. It's like easy. You just see a board gets faster. You're like, okay, signed off. So I guess, like, how do you deal with that process? And at what point do you limit the perfection of a board? Because obviously you can constantly perfect something. Like, if you have a board shape, you can just keep tweaking it and keep tweaking it and keep tweaking it, and eventually you're going to get better. But how do you start to limit that time? Like, do you have like a schedule, like a project management schedule, where you sort of go, okay, after this point, we're going to have that board signed off, and that's how you schedule your time?
Yeah, for sure. That's one of the frustrations, which is, sometimes I'll walk into the workshop on a Monday and I'll just be like, how am I going to solve it this week? Like, you often hit a wall and you have to work out and kind of find new ways to get around that. And it happens a lot with the race boards. As you said, sometimes we'll make tweaks and it will work straight away. What's really important on that is that we always try and do step by step. So if we have a reference board and then we have a V1 prototype, we'll do some changes on the V1, and then we'll then sometimes, if we want to try something else, have to make a V2, because if the V1 is now faster, then we don't want to ruin that board if we make another change. So we'll make a version 2, and then that will be have a slight difference, and then we'll compare again. And so that often happens, and we always have to take the slower board and make the change. And then if that board gets faster, then we know, okay, we'll take that design feature and put it on the fastest board, and that should make it that much faster again. So it's being disciplined in terms of always trying to make the changes kind of strategically, so you don't mess up the fastest board. Because if we tried to do all of our ideas on one board, we would just, you get to the end and then you'd be so confused on which change was better that it's very hard to keep track. And that's one of the things, like, often we have different ideas and we want to try it and we're open to trying new ideas. But my role is very much kind of, as you know, I often seem like the bad guy, because I kind of have to ask the questions and really drill in and why you think that change is going to make a difference. And doing that is just to make sure that every change we make has a reason behind it. So we don't get into that position where we've ruined a board and then we have to kind of work back. So just always making sure we do it in step by step and trying different boards is the easiest way to kind of make and record the feedback. In terms of a timeline, we on a race board, because it's developed annually, we have to do it obviously within 12 months. So normally the race program starts December time, and then the very latest is kind of October time the following next year. So it's we bring riders over during your down season, so that's normally kind of February, March time. So that's why we try and do a lot of the testing on the race side, and ideally we try and get that one board signed off, and then we'll scale it ourselves and then make sure that it's tested and refined. And then during the wave period, we'll test wave boards based on the best time of year in Bali, and also we have some surf here in Thailand sometimes, so we do that as well. So yeah, it's a frustrating one, but it's just, you just got to be very organized and disciplined in kind of not doing too many changes at once, and just making sure that we record every time the change we make and how much faster it got, because often we'll have to go back on our notes and we'll have to look at and think, oh, okay, that board got faster then, now yeah. it's not as fast. So it's always just trying to kind of keep that very tight, and again, open to ideas as long as we can kind of keep track of those.
Yeah, it's really cool process, obviously, to be a part of. But at what point do you limit your technologies and or like advance your technologies? Because obviously there's a big design process around what we're doing at the moment. We're like updating boards year on year. So we kind of have to really be careful with obviously how much we're spending versus how much like improvement we're getting, because it's constantly turning over. And there's that big improvement still coming in stand-up paddling, which has been quite phenomenal to see. Like sometimes we change a concept and you're like, whoa, like that's massive. Like how do you manage that whole process?
Yeah, we'll often look at sales numbers of boards and work out, obviously if we've developed a new range, then we obviously expect that board to be to have interest and demand, and maybe after the third cycle maybe the sales aren't as maybe a bit lower, so we'll look at kind of updating that shape again. So we do look at kind of sales numbers and feedback again on choosing which boards to develop. In terms of the race boards, yeah, we'll often make the changes on the shape and try and do that as kind of cost effectively as we can. Again, we use production boards a lot of the time to save time. So modifying a production board and using that as a prototype makes, we know exactly that the variables, the design is correct. So any change we do, we can track it really well. Sometimes when you make a new board, it takes a lot longer because you have to check everything and make sure that it's everything's symmetrical, and that sometimes takes, obviously on the CNC machine or if it's hand shaped, takes a bit longer. So we are focused on kind of, again, trying to keep these periods of development quite, as you know, they're quite intense periods of time. Like when you come over, we're very much on it every day and trying to utilize as much time so we can get as much done during a short period of time to kind of stop the development just prolonging and lasting over months. So that's one way we can kind of try and plan and obviously control costs on that. And in terms of technology, we will look at if we need to change the technology to bring down the price, or we need to improve the performance, then we'll look at that. And that's, again, very much we have to make test boards and test that, and then it's working with the production to set that up and kind of control it.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot going on all the time. There's a lot of these decisions that have to be made to make sure that the business is obviously economical and you can actually keep moving forward and keep progressing and keep creating all these new boards, but also creating that experience for the rider, whether it's in the water, whether it's touring, whether it's surfing, whether it's racing, you know, like there's so many different elements. So you've got to make sure the customer's having the best experience on the water. So what I wanted to do now is actually throw over to the website, and we're going to get you to just give us a bit more of an insight into each and every one of the boards, because as I said before, there are a lot of boards in the range, and it'd be cool to obviously hear from yourself about which boards are the right ones for which customers. So I think we've got the hard boards in this section of the websites. It's a Starboard websites. I think it's sup.star-board.com for those listening and not watching. But so we've got the hardboard section of the website. You've been obviously working for 26 years. You've got obviously the environmental initiatives that we're working towards to make sure that we're doing the right things by the environment. So we've got the bestsellers, the Go and the Touring. Can you walk us through those two boards?
Yeah. So again, Starboard, being a premium brand on the composite side, it has a lot of boards in the range. So some are high performance pro boards, some are race boards, some are foil boards. So if you're someone that wants to get into the sport, hasn't tried it or has tried it once and wants a board for kind of cruising around and general kind of just getting on the water, enjoying paddling, then the Go and the Touring boards are the perfect boards for that. So the Go is actually inspired. It takes the bottom shape is inspired from the race boards. So the All-Star and the Sprints in the past. It has a big concave on the bottom, which gives it a lot of stability, as you know. The outline of the board looks like a kind of oversized surfboard. So it's very stable. And this board is for anyone that wants to get into the sport. They're fast, they're super stable, they're very easy to use. They've got a flat deck, so it's very forgiving and easy to walk up and down the board. They come in a lot of sizes, so obviously from the 12.0 by 34 down to 10.2 by 29. These, in general, the longer boards will be suited to heavier riders. They're more stable and they're faster. The shorter the board, the more maneuverable it is, the lighter they are to carry, normally for a lighter rider. So that's why there's a lot of different kind of sizes in that range to suit those needs. So yeah, the Go board was a breakthrough really for us, because to start with, when paddleboard is started, most people were using kind of oversized, long kind of surfboards really. And they weren't that great for actually doing any distances or paddling around. You'd always have water coming over the deck and your feet would be wet. And so they weren't the best board for actually cruising. As most people, when they get into sport, they actually aren't actually going to go in the waves. They're going to be paddling on lakes and flat water and kind of small chop. And so the Go board is very thick. So when you stand on it, you're actually stood above the water. So you can keep your feet dry, you can keep gear dry. And just very, very easy to use board. And then you have the Touring board, which is in many ways a kind of wider race board. So they're designed to go to paddle longer distances. They're faster than the Go boards, just because they've got a narrower nose outline, and they're more of a race shape. But they start wide from 30 to 31 down to 29. So these boards have a lot of stability. They're designed in a way that you can carry gear. If you want to go on a longer distance paddle, or you want to kind of do some adventure paddling, you can pack all your gear on the tie downs and go quite easily. They also have the bottom shape of the race board. So again, Starboard. Up. Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm talking about. You just to give a quick history that early days of racing, back in kind of before 2016, most of the riders were using, as the kind of narrowest board was around 24, maybe 23 inches wide. And we, in 2016, developed the new All-Star, and that was the first time we introduced this big kind of concave channel, which goes down the middle of the board. And it's very much like a catamaran concept. So you have these side planes on the side, and that gives you the stability. And so because of that bottom shape, it was a big breakthrough in the sport. And we were able to then narrow the boards down in the outline. So going down to, as you know, now we have boards down at like 19.75. So it was a big breakthrough for us. We were able to get the stability and bring the boards to be narrower, so we get faster speeds. Obviously a dugout board as well is going to give you more stability, but that was a big breakthrough, and that helped us to narrow the boards.
Yeah, and so it's basically based on that all-star concept, and it's basically a more stable version. And it allows you to get a little bit more stability and probably or tie your packs on like this lady is doing.
Exactly. And most people aren't, a lot of people aren't wanting to go and race. If they had a touring board, for sure, you could do fun races and you could definitely kind of finish the races and keep up. But it's not a race board. It's not going to be the fastest board, but it's just a comfortable board that can paddle easily on flat water and chop. It can paddle distances and you can get further because of the outline and the lengths.
Can you talk us through the technologies? Because obviously there's a few different setups. You got Pine Tech, Starshot, Light Tech. Can you tell us a little bit about those?
Yeah, so specifically on the touring boards that you're looking at now, so Pine Tech is a full deck of Australian pine wood. So you can see it's very much a natural looking board. And again, going back to a bit of starboard history, starboard was one of the big breakthroughs that Sven worked on in windsurfing, was introducing kind of full wood decks and showing that on the boards. And that technology has come from windsurfing through to paddleboarding. And what it does on the Pine Tech, having the full wood on the deck, it gives it a lot of stiffness and means that we don't have to put as many layers of fiberglass. So you have the strength of the wood. And it also looks very appealing. It's when you have it on the water, it looks really natural, and it's one of the more sustainable technologies we offer. On the rails of that board, you have flax fiber as well, which is a natural fiber.
Yeah.
And then the Starshot is so the Starshot Tikini is a one-off board on this on the touring. It's it represents, we used to have a paddle for hope design, which was all pink, and this is kind of the evolution of that design. So this board is all these boards we're talking about are molded boards. The Starshot Tikini is it has a full graphic on the nose and it's a full glass layup, so it's wood standing area, and it's a very obviously it appeals to the kind of female section of the range that want it, saying it's bright. And it stands for a good cause as well, the charity of the Paddle for Hope, which raises money for cancer. And then below that you have we have Light Tech, which is our kind of entry level technology. It's one of the more value price point boards or technology. It's a full again molded board with fiberglass wrapped wood standing area. It's a great value price point, so it's slightly heavier than some of the other technologies, but it comes at the entry level.
All right. So let's cook back to, so now we've got the all-round wave boards. Let's talk about these a little bit. So you got the wide ride, the wide point, the generation. Can you tell us a little bit about those?
Yeah, so if you want to get into paddleboard SUP surfing, then these boards are the wide ride range and the wide point are the go-to boards for learning and kind of getting into the waves with paddleboarding. So just starting the wide ride, these boards are generally very kind of wide boards. They start from 11.0 down to 8.3. And this includes boards like the Whopper. So the Whopper has been one of Starboard's best-selling boards from day one. It's it was one of the, to begin with, most paddleboards at the time were kind of quite long and narrow. And the Whopper was the first board to really kind of go shorter in length and wide. So you had the stability, but you had the shorter length, so it was easier to turn in the waves. So these boards are super stable. They're very easy to kind of get in and out of the surf, in any chop or white water, they're stable. Yet they're great for learning to surf, and the length of the boards allows you to kind of get the glide to get into the wave easily, and they still turn. Like the Whopper, I love it. It's although it's a big board, it's such a fun board to surf with. And believe it or not, that board has been barreled in Chopu and Tahiti. So it's a great board, and the range is, again, the shorter you go for more lighter riders or those wanting to progress, the longer boards are for kind of, you get that extra glide, and for heavy riders or those who want that extra stability. And yeah, then you have the wide point range, which is a kind of bit more of an intermediate range. So it's still a great range for beginners to get into it, but if you look at the outline, it's much more narrow in the nose and much more pulled in the tail. So all these boards are at 32 wide, so it's still very wide boards, so it gives you the stability, but the shape, the outline shape of these boards allow a bit more progression there, because you've got a narrower nose, you're able to do turns and not catch that nose as you would on a wider board. So they're a bit more performance based, yet still a great entry level board, and it gives you that progression. It's a one board that if you start wanting to learn to sup surf, you can progress and still have a great board to really get the best of your surfing.
Yeah, and then you've got the Generation, which is obviously a bit of a mixture board.
Yeah, the Generation was a new board for 2020. This board is a 3-in-1, so it's 12'6". It's the length of a race board. It's basically for surfing, racing, and touring. So we developed this board to really be a kind of one board quiver. So if you wanted a race board, you could race on this. If you want to just go cruising and have a board that can paddle fast, it's great for that. And if you want to go in the waves, it actually performs really well because of the narrow tail outline. You can step back and turn it very easily.
Very good. Yeah, so that's like obviously like the all-round sort of boards. Now we move down a little bit lower and we go into the surf style ones, the Hypernuts there, the one that you said it was like the hardest board in the world to shape.
Yeah.
So we'll start with the longboard. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so the longboard is
your favorite one.
It's one of my favorites. It's based on the longboard surf, which was the 9-1 surf longboard, which was one of the best surf longboards we've made. And I always remember I asked Benoit, Connor, and Zane at dinner one time if they could choose one board from the starboard range for the rest of their lives, what would they choose? And they said the 9-1 longboard surfboard. And so I took that and kind of basically used that as the benchmark and kind of brought that into a sup. So these boards are designed for more longboard style riding. So you have the length to get into the waves early, yet they're more drawn out turns. You can ride on the nose very easily. They're super thin rails, so very easy. They have a lot of bite and very responsive when you turn. And they're available in two sizes, the 10-0 by 29 and the 9-0 by 28. So it's a longboard that's it's a high performance longboard. So it's more of a, compared to the wide ride or the wide point, it's giving you a bit more lower volume longboard style riding. And then you have the Hypernut range, which is, if you have a look at it from the first time, it looks a bit odd. It's one of the first ranges to go really short and compact. And so all these boards start, the biggest board starts from 9-0 down to 7-0. So the main feature on these boards is because they're very short and have very kind of square nose and square tail, they hold a lot of volume and float, even though they're so short. So if you're riding a bigger board, like a 10-foot board, you can actually drop down to maybe an 8-4 and have similar stability. And these boards, because they're so short, are really easy to turn. They're very very loose and really fun boards to ride. A lot of people kind of say they often feel like a skateboard. They're really reactive and responsive because they're so short.
And what is it about the design that makes it quite a good board? Because obviously it's got that little bit of a kink honestly in it. So what is it? What is that for?
Yeah, so it has the kind of nut outline. So as you say, there's a bit of an indent about 3/4 of the way up. And
yeah, just here.
That what it does is it kind of emphasizes it's a turning point basically. So it allows you to turn off the rail on that, which allows you to come round on turns very easily. So we've tried boards before by filling in this, making it much straighter, and we lost a lot of the drive and they didn't feel alive. And then as soon as we put this kind of indent in, it allows you to have a turning point behind, and so it really comes around really easily based on that angle just behind that where the nut is. So it's it helps to turn the boards turn really easily, and it allows when you're on the rail, it accelerates the water line. So they're really, again, we've tried many times taking it away and refining it, and they were always better with that rail. So
yeah, cool. Yeah. And you've got the Pro. This is obviously the guys who are using the Pro range, the guys winning the ISA gold medals and that sort of thing. These are the boards that they design, help you design over in Bali when you go on trips. And then obviously all the other boards are sort of designed with them as well. But these are the ones that they focus a lot on because they're kind of like the race board range, I guess, for racers like myself. Can you talk through us a little bit about these boards?
Yeah, so these are the high performance wave boards. So if you want the best performance from a SUP surfboard, then this is the range to go to. So these boards we develop, as you said, every year. With previously I worked with Sean Pointer and Zane and Benoit every year, and we develop the smaller size first. So we start with their Pro model, and they give us different feedback on what we want to change, and then from there we start to scale up. And so these boards generally are lower volume. They start from 810, which is the longest, down to 7.0. So there's a lot of boards in there, and the riders that obviously choose these boards are more focused on, they're looking at the volume ratio, so what they can stand on, more than the actual kind of length or width. So because they're so short and they've got very thin rails, they deliver the best performance wave riding. So that's the board to go to if you want to get into SUP surfing and you want to improve. Then eventually you want to get on a Pro board, and that's going to definitely step up your SUP surfing.
And what board would you get for like a 78 kilo guy who's about 172 centimeters?
You would, depending on the ability of the rider.
So super mid range.
Okay, I would say the 7.5 would be the 7.5 by 26 is a good board. The 7.10 definitely will be more stable, but I think the 7.5 would be the one to go to there.
I'm mentally taking notes of all the boards that I want to eventually get, so that's always the issue. You always want to get more. So here's a little bit more up my alley, but I'll let you describe it because you're the guy who actually puts all the boards together. We've got the All-Star, the Sprint, the Ace. They're the race board range. They're the best race boards on the market as far as I'm concerned. And that's why I actually joined Starboard in the first place, because that was the first thing that I wanted, was the best boards. And the rest of the journey came with it. And it's been a fantastic experience. But can you tell us a little bit about the All-Star first?
Yeah, so the three boards, the All-Star to begin with is the kind of one board that does it all. So this board can be raced on flat water. It can handle chop. It's the best board for surfing, downwind, upwind. It's the one board in all conditions that's going to work. So if you were to buy one race board, then the All-Star would be that go-to board. So it's over the years, it's changed, and we've made tweaks. And for 020, it has kind of a big change again on the bottom shape mainly. So we actually inverse, and now it's got more of a V and a belly to instead of the concave, which we discussed earlier. And that really helped give the board more float and get up to speed faster and make it more maneuverable and better performing in the chop. So that's what you can see there on that, that kind of center line V that runs throughout the board.
Yeah.
It makes it sit higher on the water, and so you're able to get up to speed that much faster. And so exactly, you can see there on that outline. The All-Star is really designed to be the kind of most versatile board in the range. Whenever we develop these boards, we have to make sure that we're always trying to kind of meet all the different parts of that, whether it's surfing, whether it's in chop, flat water. It's been probably the most popular board sold in the entire race program, just because it's so versatile. And it's won sprint races. Like, as you know, Connor used the All-Star in China recently, where he won the sprint race. And it's it's obviously a good board for choppy conditions as well, like the gorge, and it's the best board for all conditions, and it's available obviously in 12, 6, and 14. And the wider the board, the more stable and suited for heavy riders, down to kind of the most elite or higher skilled, down to 22.5.
And what would you recommend? I know a lot of people have this question, is like, if you're say like a 100 kilo male or a 50 kilogram female, or vice versa, what boards would you be pointing people towards for those type of range? Because people get a little bit confused as to which board they should buy. Can you give a little bit of advice on that?
Yeah, I suppose the race boards is always tricky. Like with any of the ranges, you could be a really skilled racer and weigh 100 kilos, and so you're probably more able to handle a narrower board. Well, someone that's maybe lighter but has just started the sport, that's really not confident with their balance, even though they could ride a narrower board, maybe they're more suited to start on a wider board. So it does depend a bit on your skill level and your rider weight. If we look back at the surfboards, you could have a heavy rider that's a really good surfer, and so he'll look at the volume more than the actual width, just to see the float. So that's always one to take into account. But if you're a 100 kilo guy and you've done a bit of paddleboarding and you want to kind of get better at racing, then I would probably look at the 26 as a go-to board for that. Maybe the 24.5 if they've got a bit more skill and they've had more experience. With race boards, you do progress quite quickly, and once you've been on a board for a while, you start to really understand how it feels. And so that often people think they need a bigger board, but one of the main points with Starboard in the past and now is that maybe they've tried another board and it was a lot wider, and so they think they need a 28 board, but actually when they try one of our boards, maybe even a 24.5, it feels as stable. So it's always trying different boards, and we always look at the stability and speed and the power transfer. Like, again, if you're a heavier paddler, maybe you could ride a 24.5 or a 23.5, but you're losing more energy trying to balance on the board. So you're actually going to be faster on a wider board, where you have more stability and you're able to put more power transfer with every stroke. If you're struggling to stand on a board, then you're not going to be able to put as much power and as much energy in each stroke. So you have to look at if you're more stable on one board, you're going to be able to paddle faster than if you're trying to ride a really narrow board and not stable. You're going to lose a lot of speed from trying to balance and kind of losing strokes.
Yeah, and I think something that's really important is, I think people don't give their enough time to getting used to their board before they make a decision on a board. Because I know there was with the new belly concept, that we gave that extra convex, or the opposite concave is what we had previously on the sprints and the all-stars. People were getting like a bit intimidated by the board because it felt different. But I think it's all about spending the time on the board to get used to the board, and then you learn how it reacts. But if you're used to a board performing a certain way, that's why one of the reasons why I don't jump around on my boards a lot in races, is because sometimes I only race the sprint, is because I'm so used to that board. If I try and learn how to paddle my all-star or my ace again just before I have to race, it's quite hard to relearn that board properly. So sometimes it's just an advantage to actually understand the board you're racing on.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that's one thing this year with the all-star, that because we've changed the bottom shape dramatically from what it was before, it does have a different feel. It will feel a bit more rolly, but it does still have the secondary stability. So it's, like you said, it's just getting used to the difference in feel.
And I was really impressed with myself just then putting on the jumper while we're still recording, because I was getting a bit cold here in Perth. It's getting cold. It's just quite upsetting. So I've normally gone away by this point. I'm starting to chase the American and European summers. So it's all bad news for me at the moment.
I had to move office.
Sorry.
I had to move offices earlier because the aircon was so bad on everyone that was sweating, because it's so hot here in Thailand. So we're in different circumstances.
I know. Let's talk about my favorite board, the sprint, a little bit.
Yeah, so the sprint, at the beginning when we introduced the sprint, it was a flat water board. So it was only used a very small chop and it excelled in flat water. The sprint compared to the All-Star, the main difference is the rocker. So these boards have a really flat rocker to extend the water line, and then that gives you that extra glide. However, the sprint in over the last few years has become way more versatile, as you know, and that, I think that's why a lot of people now are looking at the sprint more than the All-Star in some ways, because we back in early on, the sprint used to have an open tail, so whenever you'd use it in kind of downwind conditions, you would kind of fill up the standing tray and it wouldn't really work. But from 2017, we filled that in, and that really changed the sprint and made it open up to becoming more of a versatile board that can be used in chop and flat water. So the sprint definitely is more versatile, and is, as you show on the races, you use it, and as well as Daniel, it can be used in choppy water now. And it's just getting used to that. It's slightly more technical than the All-Star in terms of you have to trim it a bit more, and as you know, have to be a bit more precise and fast moving your feet compared to the All-Star. But it does work, and it's a dugout board, and that gives you the stability. So we're able to make the boards a lot narrower because you can stand much lower down, and that increases your center of gravity. So you have more stability. And these boards, as I said, they're very flat. They're quite thick in the outline. So because they're very thick, we're able to, again, go in the chop without water kind of just flooding in. And every year, when we're developing these boards, as you know, the last year or two, when we make a board narrower, it gets faster, but it sinks slower in the water. So we have to increase the thickness to give you that pop still. So you're able to kind of pop up, and it's not sinking too much. So yeah, it's much more versatile.
Can you explain a little bit about the volume on the Starboard race range? Because it's generally a little bit more than most other board ranges. And I like it because it obviously makes the board more versatile. I get more pop out of the board. And I'm actually one of the guys actually is adding the volume most of the time because I find I need it, especially in like choppy conditions or when I'm going through swells or downwinding, or when I'm obviously paddling on the flat, it gives me that little bit more height and actually makes the board a little bit more responsive, especially sitting in packs and sitting on washes and that sort of thing. Can you explain the thought processes behind that a little bit more?
Yeah, definitely. The boards, again, from early days of race boards, the boards were much lower volume, but every year, not all boards, but we seem to be redistributing that volume. And yeah, some people look at our boards and think, wow, they're really thick and they look a bit kind of big. But every year we've added more volume or redistributed it, they've become faster. And it's something that is has proven year on year to really make a big difference. And yeah, it's having quite a lot of nose volume. When you're in choppy water, it means that you can paddle upwind and the board is not going to get stuck. If you've got a really thin nose, the board will get stuck in the chop, and then you're having to always put a really strong stroke in to lift that nose, and you lose a lot of energy. So having quite a voluminous nose means that you can paddle upwind and it just sits and floats over the chop more than kind of getting caught and always having to pitch to bring that nose back up. And again, in downwind, it's a similar thing. If you have a really low volume nose, often you have to really do a strong stroke or stand further back on the board to lift the nose. If you've got a bigger volume nose, it seems to kind of pop back up that much quicker. And even on flat water, we've found that if you look at videos, when you're really doing sprinting, the whole board comes underwater. And so you need a level of thickness to give you that kind of pop to get you back up and kind of excel you. Yeah, the lift through your stroke. And it's been one where we've had like Fiona Wild also came last year, and I made her three different boards, all different thicknesses, and it was clear she made the decision. I didn't push her at all on that. She came out and said, yeah, the bigger volume board, even though Fiona's a very light rider, she found that on the 22.5 it really made it that much more usable, and it was faster, so it was clear.
Yeah, it's quite a common misconception that like everyone needs this really small surfboard looking board, but when you're actually out there and you're racing, the volume actually helps a lot. It does, when you're looking at it, you're like, in your head, you're sort of thinking it, but I just don't think that anymore. Like I don't see volume. I'm like, this board's too small. I gotta build up.
Yeah. It's one that, again, it's obviously the thicker the boards, sometimes it will increase the weight of the boards, but we still found that even if the boards become a little bit heavier, they're still faster overall, despite an increase in weight because of the shape. So it's,
And can you tell us a little bit about the different constructions here? We've got the carbon sandwich and the wood carbon.
Yeah, so the carbon sandwich has been our kind of longest standing technology for the race boards. It's a full carbon wrap, and it uses the lightest weight carbon we can kind of buy. It's 100 gram biaxial carbon, which wraps the whole of the board. But what makes the carbon sandwich really unique and separates kind of Starboard is that it's a full PVC wrap. So just not to go into too much detail, but a board has an EPS core, so a foam core. And then what happens on the sandwich board is we put a layer of glass, and then we PVC, which is this high density foam, which doesn't absorb water, it's really good against impact. And we wrap that again around the EPS. So the board becomes significantly more stronger in terms of impact and total breakage. And then on top of that PVC foam, we then have a full wrap of carbon. So these boards are built to be the lightest we can make, being a sandwich board, but also the strongest. So these boards, We use production boards for all team riders. We don't make custom boards. Sometimes we'll look at maybe changing one part, but it's the riders trust that if they have a sandwich board, that they're going to be able to go to a race, and it's going to be fine when they open their board bag. It's strong. So the carbon sandwich really is the lightest weight and most durable because of the way it's built. And that makes it the premium price point, because these boards last, and then they deliver the best performance. They have the best flex, and they're the strongest and lightest we make.
I think one of the cool things that Starboard does as well is we as team riders actually race the same board that everybody else races on. And I guess when you're buying it from the market, that's exactly the same board that I race on. We can do that because I do get so much say in what board and what the board looks like. So I am very happy to do that, and all the riders are very happy to. We sort of all have like quite a good trust, I think, with obviously all the team riders, the production teams, Sven, and everybody out there who sort of trusts us all to make that good board, so we can all get out there and race on it, race it well. But just throwing over to the wood carbon.
Yeah, the wood carbon is it's a lower price point, so it's more of an entry level offering. It's got a full carbon standing area and a full wood deck, so it's super strong on the standing area. It's a glass layup overall, so it's got a full wrap of glass, so it's slightly heavier than the carbon sandwich, and it's got a lot of reinforcements. It's got carbon, UD carbon on the rails, so it's still a stiff board, but it's slightly heavier than the carbon sandwich model.
Yeah, very good. Well, that's the race board range so far. Now we've got the downwind board, the Ace. Can you tell us a little bit about the Ace and how that sort of came about? And obviously it was one of the best boards, obviously, for downwind conditions. We probably don't race as much downwind, direct downwind as much as we used to, but when we do, this is the board to go to.
Yeah, the Ace has been a board that is very unique in terms of its shape. Starboard introduced this shape, I think, maybe 2009. So it's been in the Starboard range for a long time now. And it's, as you said, it's the best board for downwind conditions. So open ocean, downwind, big kind of swell, it's the best board for that. It's not as versatile like the Sprint and the All-Star, so it's not going to excel as much on flat water or more varied conditions. It's, as you say, it's more dedicated for those downwinds. So what makes this unique is the outline, really. So as you can see, it's got the tail is very narrow. It's got a really thin tail, and then quite a big kind of wider, thicker nose. And so what this does is, when, for instance, when you're paddling upwind, it kind of rocks. So as you're paddling over the chop, the high volume nose kind of lifts over, and the tail starts to sink. So you've got this kind of rocking, which helps you really get over the bumps easily. And that allows you to really pick up speed and float between swell. So on downwind, when you're getting into the waves, again, by having this narrow tail and having this kind of rocking motion, you're able to do really fast strokes and get into the waves and connect very easily. So it's a dugout standing. It was one of the first in the range to be dugout. Again, it gives you that lower center of gravity for stability. And it's got the high wall. So again, if you're paddling and chop, the water kind of is blocked, doesn't flow over into the standing area. So you're able to paddle in pretty rough conditions and have the control you need.
Yeah, it's a really good ball for the downwind. I've got one of those in order. I'm just waiting for it to come in. So I can't wait to get the new one in. I've got obviously one of the older ones in the garage. So we'll go into
you're obviously unlimited is kind of based on the Ace as well. So you know how it works in the big ocean swells.
Yeah, it's been obviously very cool to be able to test those different boards and different designs in the ocean. And it's just fun. Everything's fun, and you just get to try so many different things all the time and in different environments. I think that's what's really cool about stand-up paddling and with starboard in general. Like we obviously cover every single basis, and we get to go play in every single conditions, and it's just really nice to have that opportunity. So speaking of going in every condition and trying new things, we've got the hyper foil range and the hyper nut foil range. Send me new boards for the ranges. I've obviously got one of the hyper foils, and it's been fun to go downwinding on that and surfing. How have you found the whole progression into this market?
Yeah, so foiling is, as I said at the beginning, it's still very new, and there's a lot of development and progress to make still. It's like an open field, and there's lots of variables that change the way that the boards feel. But yeah, we started with the hypernut, because when you're foiling, you really want the shortest board possible. So you want stability, but you want to be able to kind of trim the board and be able to kind of surf and pump the board. And if you have a long board, it's harder to do that. So in general, the shorter the board, the better. And so the Hypernut really was the best board to begin with, and still is, for it's one of those boards that does it all. So the 4-in-1, and we also have the 2-in-1. You can use those boards for normal surfing. Yeah. The 4-in-1 is a really special one, because you can windsurf it, you can windsurf foil it, you can SUP surf it, and you can SUP foil it. So it is literally one board. If you had to have one board in the quiver and you windsurfed, it would be the ideal go-to. The 2-in-1 is more focused on just SUP surfing and SUP foiling. So yeah, if you want a board that does both surfing and foiling, then the Hypernut is without doubt the best board. It's, again, because you've got that short outline, it makes it really easy to pump. And again, at the very early days of foiling, you saw a lot of people using from different brands, also kind of looking at those kind of style shapes, because they're so short and easy to maneuver. And then if you want a more dedicated foil board that you're not going to go surfing, you just want a SUP foil board, then the hyper foil is that that option. So these are, again, shorter, and they're designed specifically to give you the best performance when foiling. So they've got quite a few unique features on the bottom of these boards. They've got these deep channels that run through them, and that helps you when you touch down from flying, helps you to really kind of pop back up. You don't lose so much speed, and also it helps with stability. You can kind of gives you a bit more tracking and stability. And then these boards, they're kind of fairly thick, so you have the the stability and float being so short. So you have boards like 6'4", 6'8" as well. So 7'2" and 7'7" and 6'6". So the boards again are really short and compact to give you that easy pumping, easy turning when you're up and riding.
Yeah, they're really fun boards to play with. I've been smashing my board the past few months, getting some foil downwinds in. It's been really, really cool to be able to do and to learn that new sport and get that new perspective on the ocean. It's been pretty awesome. So you've also got obviously the favorite longboard and the foil surf for the phone. Can you tell us a little bit about those?
Yeah, the longboard, as I said earlier, is a high performance longboard shape for surfing, not subsurfing. It's been developed with originally in South Africa, and it's just a high performance favorite for Zane, Connor, but anyone that wants to get into longboarding, that's the board to go to for surfing. And then the foil surf, which is foil specific boards for surfing. So even though Zane can actually stand on the 5'6", I think, and paddle that as a sup, these boards are designed for surfing. So again, shorter, even you have 6'0" down to 4'8". These boards are fairly thick. They're the boards that are easy, really easy to get into the waves. And again, being so short, they're very maneuverable and even easier to pump. Compared to SUP, you have the advantage of the paddle. These, because they're shorter, they're easy to pump. You have less board in front of you. On the hyperfoil, just to go back, it's not just for, so it's one board that can be used for downwind surfing and also winging now as well. So it's a board that's great for those, as well as the hypernut.
Yeah, I want to get into winging as well. I'm waiting for my wing to turn up. It's become a bit of a play year this year because we haven't been able to go away and race. So I've been trying to look at how many things I can play with while I've got a bit more time. We got the SUP Kids board.
Yeah, so the SUP Kids is a scaled down All Star. Where you have two boards, you have the All Star and then the Pro board. These boards are just scaled down. So the 7'4" Pro is actually one of the original pros from 2015. And then the All-Star has all the same features for the concave. So we actually do develop these, and these are tested with different kids, different youth riders. So these boards are the go-to for kind of getting into racing and subsurfing, kind of paddling, scaled down versions for lighter riders.
Yeah, it's cool that there's a kids range. I actually didn't really even know that there were kids range in there. So I'm learning too today, which is exciting. And this is the go-to flat water board now. I've been lucky enough to paddle this, and I think I worked at the standing position of this board when I was in Thailand one of the years. And it's just a board that's got no splash, and it just moves so smoothly through flat water. Can you give us a little bit of insight into it?
Exactly. It's developed. It's quite a unique looking board. So it's got some features: the outline, the bottom shape. It's got a very thin kind of nose. So like you say, you can paddle this board and it just doesn't make any noise, no splash or anything. So it's very relaxing to paddle, and you really feel like you're going fast. And we compared these boards to some of the race boards in the line, and yeah, they are actually competitive. So they're really fast. They've got that easy glide. They're ideal for flat water. They don't work in chop just because of the outline of the boards. So kind of maximum shin high chop, but these boards are the best boards for flat water, really. They've got storage in front of the nose, and they've got these cutaways which give you a really clean release at the tail. So there's hardly any wake. So it's a board that's designed for just kind of speed and smoothness on the water.
Yeah, that's a really, really good board to paddle. One thing I did forget to bring up, I know that we've got some wings coming for the foiling ranges. You want to let us know a little bit of the inside knowledge? Probably don't tell us too much, because I'll get in trouble.
Yeah, so we are very soon releasing the free wings, which are, as you've probably seen, wings are going crazy at the minute. And it's been great fun developing those. We've been working with ex kind of kite surf champion in Spain, Alvaro from Tarifa, and developing it also with Clinton in Airrush. So it's been a lot of work, and we're really excited to release those very soon. And yeah, we definitely see that winging is again a new discipline, and it's super exciting. I think for any, if you're a windsurfer, it's also intriguing. If you're a paddle surfer and you want to have a wind sport, then it's an ideal one. I think it's easier to learn than windsurfing, and probably kite surfing is less gear. So yeah, it's for those that want a wind sport, then winging is definitely one to look into. And yeah, Starboard will have a full range very soon.
Yeah, it's been I've obviously looked at the wind on the easterlies in the river, and I've always thought that was kind of annoying, but now I could probably go winging there, so it's a bit more exciting. So I've never really windsurfed that much, unless you call windsurfing out and back at that San Diego meeting windsurfing, and that's about as exciting as it got. So you got these Light Tech boards, can you explain a little bit about those?
Yeah, so Light Tech is a technology, and we group some of our best-selling boards in that technology. So again, you've got the GOES, the Touring, Waterline, some of the surf models. So it's our kind of best price point, value entry level technology. So that's why we select some of our best models for that range.
And then we have SUP windsurf boards.
Yeah, so we've got the SUP windsurf, which are, if you want a paddleboard and a windsurf board, then we offer the GO board in four different sizes. So the 12.0 down to 10.8, and also, sorry, the Whopper. So these boards, yeah, they have extra side fins, which help you kind of have the control to go upwind. And yeah, they're great boards for if you want to have a day when you want to go windsurfing and then you want to go paddleboarding the next day. They have those inserts.
This is the board that Bart was doing tricks on at the photo shoot, isn't it?
Exactly.
Very good. Okay, so I think we've covered the hardboard range. Would that be right?
Yeah.
So now we've got to go into inflatables, because they're quite a, I don't know, it's called inflatable boards. And this is a huge range, obviously, for Starboard, because a lot of people can't use their boards, or can't store their boards. So these inflatable boards have been really well constructed. Obviously, they're very, very strong now. Like, I remember seeing people surfing them in Tahiti, which was quite cool to watch. I think they've been surfed at Chopu as well. Can you tell us a little bit about the inflatable range?
Yeah, so the inflatable range is actually, it's the first kind of last couple of years inflatables have actually been more more popular and more sales than the composite, and it's for good reason. Obviously, a lot of places, they want the storage, as you mentioned, they want a board that they can easily travel with, and for a lot of people getting into sport, it's great for them, because they can travel, they can take on holiday. They can have the kids to use it, and it's not as, they don't have to worry about that storage. So inflatables, like the hardboards, we have a big range again, because we cater for those different niches. We really focus a lot on the technologies of the inflatables. So Starboard has really been pioneering and working a lot on developing these technologies. As I said at the beginning, there's some limitations on the way these boards are built and the shapes you can make. But we've introduced a lot of technologies which are new to the market, such as this year we have our new woven technology. So these boards use, I won't go into too much detail, but it's the inside an inflatable board, you have lots of yarns. And it's now using a woven technology instead of a knitted. And the easiest way to explain this is if you compare it to like a t-shirt versus a knitted jumper. If you have a woven sports t-shirt, if you pull that t-shirt in any way, the yarns are pretty stiff. Versus a knitted jumper, if you pull that, then you're going to open up, and there's going to be a lot of stretching between the yarns and how it's built. And so what that feels like on the water is a stiffer board is always going to feel much more solid and faster. It's going to be more responsive. So the woven technology has been a big, great breakthrough. Now the boards are lighter because we use less yarns and they're more responsive and stiffer. So that's a big one in terms of technology. And one of the big things that we developed a few years ago now was welding. So one of the problems with inflatables in the past is obviously we use a glue to glue the different PVC layers to the board. And Starboard spent a long time developing this technology where we actually heat weld the rails of the board. So we make a kind of mechanical bond. So we basically melt two layers into one. So you don't have that that risk of the glue failing.
Yeah.
So that's been a big a development again, which is making the boards last longer and are much stronger.
Yeah, it's very cool to hear these technologies, actually look at them as well, because I'm probably not one to jump on the website as often as I would like to, but it's really cool to actually learn about all this stuff that you guys do in the background, because I get a bit sucked into the race boards and racing all the time, but it's kind of nice to learn a little bit about all the board designs myself. So we've got two of the major inflatables, the best sellers, as it says, the iGo and the Touring inflatable. Can you tell us about those?
Yeah, so again, similar to the composite, the Go and the Touring, those boards that if you want to get into the sport and you just want a board for cruising, paddling on with friends, family, then these boards are those kind of the best options. So the Go, again, lots of different sizes from 12.0 to 10.0. You've got the longer boards, which are more stable, faster to paddle. And you've got the smaller boards, which are more maneuverable and lighter. So these boards are really stable. They have quite a wide nose and tail outline. So you have the stability. And they come in different, as you're clicking now, you can see different technologies. We have the Deluxe Double Chamber, which is, again, a Starboard, one of the first to have an extra chamber in the board. We had it in our Life Rescue boards, I think from 2011. And now we have double chamber technology where it's basically an additional inflatable chamber inside the board. And that helps stiffen up the board a lot. And also, if you ever have a problem or you kind of run into trouble, then you have that extra flotation device. Then you have the Deluxe Single Chamber, which is the similar technology as the double, just without that extra chamber. And then you have the Tikini, which is designed by Sonny Honchard, who has designed three colorways similar to the composite as well that are really kind of eye-catching and yeah, they look great on the water.
And then the Zen,
which is your more price point technology. Again, this is only offered in a few sizes. This is offered in 10.8 and the touring boards. It's the lightest weight and it's built with a linear drop stitch, which again, we were the first to introduce that, where it's stiffer. It's a knitted drop stitch, but all the yarns that go in one direction, which gives you a lot of stiffness.
Yeah, and you've got lots of versatility on these boards as well. You can strap things down, you can windsurf on them. They're pretty impressive, and you can pack them all up into a backpack and take them around the place. So it makes it a pretty handy little solution for you, especially in those European cities or in Asia where there isn't, or any major city where you can't really get out there and strap your board or throw them in the garage when you're in those group car parks. You don't even have a car park, which is hard for me to believe, I guess, living here in Australia where there's so much space. But when I get over there, you can really tell that these boards have a really big place in the world and in the market and help a lot of people get out into the water. So a whole bunch of range again. So you got the yoga mat. You've got the yoga inflatable, the tiki mat. You've got the surf inflatable, the all-star inflatable. Can you tell us a little bit about all of those?
Yeah, again, we have to cater for the niches. So we have the race inflatable boards, which is the airline all-stars. The surf inflatable, which is actually designed based on the wide point range. And those boards can be surfed, as you said before, we were surfing those in some fairly big waves in Tahiti. Then we have the yoga, so that board is designed to be super stable, full EVA pad, so you can go out in the water and do your yoga poses and fitness on that. It has the options to kind of tie down using an anchor as well, and you can store your paddle on the side. And then the yoga mat, which is, as you can see, it's basically an oversized yoga mat which you can float on in swimming pools and the water. Yeah. And it's not really a board to paddle, but it's awesome. Sure. If you want to do it.
Our race board is not going to become this soon.
You never know. but yeah, the most interesting. The airline really is one of the breakthroughs. Going back just to the All Star, that was a technology where we were really trying to work out how can we stiffen up these boards and really close the gap between an inflatable paddleboard versus a composite paddleboard. And it basically has it's got a nose cone at the very top of the board, so on the nose, which has a Dyneema line which runs underneath the board and is attached to the fin box. And yeah, that board is the line is actually shorter than the board. So when you pump the board up, that stiffens. And the board still flexes, but it's the response, the recoil, that makes this board so special. So even though it will flex still, it snaps back to position because that line wants to pull you, kind of, it wants to become under tension again. And so it really helps you kind of pulse and move forwards. I've used it in a race, and I know that you've tried it here, and a few, Connor's used it a few times. And these boards really are like, they feel very responsive and fast. And because you've got an inflatable, they're a lot lighter than what we can make a composite board. So maybe not going to beat you on a sprint yet, but they are getting better and better every year.
Well, yeah, I remember back when Bruno and I did that video, it was quite surprising. Obviously, it was a flat water lake and we were sprinting, but it was very, very compatible. I was really surprised at the time because we were actually quite close in speed. But when you're designing something like this, like, how do you think of all these different aspects to make them that little bit stiffer, that little bit faster, a little bit more pressure? Because, like, I guess the more pressure you put in them, the stiffer they're going to get.
Yeah, the pressure definitely helps. Obviously, yeah, having the woven technology and the welding helps with the pressure. But the whole airline concept of the line running underneath the board, that was, I think we were on a round table discussion, just trying to kind of get as many different ideas down and to see how we could stiffen up those boards and make them really responsive. I can't remember who came up with it, but it was one that was refined, and it took a long time to kind of refine it, but it really makes a difference.
What's cool is I actually was going to race that board this year at the what's that event called in the States? The week after Carolina Cup, it was like an inflatable one.
Yeah,
I was going to race it, but obviously I'm not racing it now. But and then you got like a whole bunch of different boards here as well. You got the River inflatable, the Vision inflatable, the SUP Kids inflatable, the SUP Windsurf inflatable. And then you've got the Team inflatable. Can you tell us a little bit about those?
Yeah, so basically the River is, as it sounds, you can use these boards in the rivers. They were designed to kind of handle pretty radical rivers to begin with. And so you have a 9.6 by 36, which is the shortest board, which, as I said, can handle some fairly technical rivers and white waters. And then you have the bigger boards at the 10.11 and the 11.0, which are a bit longer, give you that extra glide for more kind of river racing. So these boards are built with an extra layer. They're made super durable so that if you hit a rock or if you obviously you get going down some pretty technical courses, that they're going to kind of handle it and be able to bounce back. And that's why the inflatables work so well on compared to a composite board on rivers, because they're much more forgiving. And you don't have to worry about kind of dings or hitting a rock and then kind of getting stuck halfway down.
Have you done any river paddling like this? Because it's something that's really kind of cool.
I haven't, but I want to. I've done I wouldn't say it's really a very radical river, but I've done a little bit, but I would like to do more for sure.
Yeah, I like, there's so much different types of paddling I want to do. And looking at this stuff just makes me want to do it more. So the rest of them?
Yeah, so the Vision is a board which has a water viewing window. So there's basically a transparent window on the board where you can see what's underneath you. So if you're fortunate and lucky enough to live in somewhere where there's clear water, then yeah, it's the best board. If you have kids or you want to just go and kind of cruise and see what's underneath you, you can kind of store stuff in there. And I was lucky enough to obviously when we're in Tahiti again, this board, you can actually just look underneath you and see what's under there. And yes, it's the best board if you've got some clear water.
Yeah.
Then you have the kids boards again. You have a racer and then a 9-0. Again, these boards, the kids inflatables are really, in general, inflatables are much more forgiving. Gives a lot more confidence to people if they know that if they fall on the board, they're then a bit more forgiving. They're not going to hurt, or it's not going to be as hard an impact if you fall. So the kids inflatables are really popular for that. And then we have also the inflatable windsurf, the touring, the blend, and the iGo. So again, it's pretty cool. You can travel and have a windsurf gear and a paddleboard in a bag and kind of go anywhere in the world.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It sounds pretty cool. And then you've got the big one.
The team, the big boys. So these boards are for lots of people to paddle. So if you've got team building events, or if you want to have races with lots of people, you have a few options. If you have big families, you want it all done on the board at the same time, then these boards are for that. So they're ideal for team events. And you have the windsurf option. So all the boards now have the windsurf insert. And then you have the family, the big starship, and the racer as well.
Yeah, I remember racing. I remember being at this photo shoot, we were racing these with the kids in Tahiti. It was quite a fun experience. And we had like the two different teams going, and Kim was looking after the kids, and I got stung by a bee, which wasn't that fun. But so I think we pretty much ran through the full paddleboard range, which is quite cool, obviously, to see and hear about all those different boards. Is there any other boards that we should be looking at while we're here? Or we can just point to, if anyone wants to come onto the website, they can actually go to the board selector and it'll help you choose your board and help you decide which one you want to get. So it makes it a lot easier to make your board selection, and you can actually go through these options and actually choose which board you want to get. And it asks you some simple questions and actually can help you really design or just choose your own board.
Yeah, I think that's the point of, again, Starboard being kind of a world leader and obviously on the performance side, and being kind of the premium brand and making sure that we cater for all the different niches. We do have a big range, but it's not so overwhelming when you really look at it. And if you just want to kind of get into sport and the go and the touring boards are the go-to boards. And if you want more of the niche, like the pro or the rivers, then we also offer that. So yeah, it's a big range, but once you kind of and know what you're looking for, it's easier to kind of focus on which board suits you.
I found my board. It didn't take too long. It was my third piece. I got it right the third time. And then obviously there's, like, if you ever want to find a board, you can actually go to the shop section. There's all the distributors' shops. There's so many distributors of Starboard around the world, and you can actually basically get a board wherever you like. Make sure you come to this map and check out where your distributor or your shops are, and you'll be able to find a board for you. Let's probably wrap this up, unless you got something else to add. Like, how is everything going over there for Starboard, and what sort of plans does Starboard have in the future for their product ranges? Without giving too much away.
Yeah, with Starboard, obviously we're always kind of operating on model years ahead of what we are now, so can't give much away. But yeah, I'm already signing off a lot of the O22 boards, as you know, so it's always trying to manage kind of the new development and then also seeing what's in production. And so we're always busy on that. Obviously with the coronavirus at the moment, we're still operating. Luckily we're able to kind of work. It's not so bad here in Thailand. There's definitely restrictions, but we're able to kind of, some people working remotely, but the workshop and stuff still running. So I think, Starboard is always going to be developing new boards and always focusing on the new aspects of the sport. And as we mentioned earlier, winging will be definitely a new exciting part that I definitely want to do more of. And as you said, you want to do more of as well. So yeah, I think our sport, even though we always kind of bring new boards out, there's always kind of ways to find new paths, whether it's foiling or if it's racing. It's super exciting to kind of work on.
Well, yeah, it's so cool, obviously, to be a part of a brand and be a part of a sport and an infrastructure that allows you to do so many different sports. There's obviously the foiling side of Starboard, there's the windsurf side of Starboard, then there's all these other new projects that are constantly going on in the background, and it's always fun to be a part of. Is there anywhere, I know where to check out. If you want to check out more about Starboard, go to www.star-board.com, and then you can choose which one you want to check out, or you can go to @StarboardSup on Instagram and Starboard Sup on Facebook. Is there anything else I've missed out on? Is there anything else you wanted to add?
No, I think you got it.
Yeah.
That's good to go.
All right, mate. Well, I really appreciate your time today. And I think if anybody wants to check out some more of this, is like, how can people get in contact with Starboard? Just through the website or through the social medias?
Yeah, through the social media, through the website. Through the website, you can obviously email and contact us directly. So yeah, that's the best way.
All right. Well, mate, really appreciate you coming on today. Really appreciate everyone watching. If you have gotten this far, really appreciate your time today. If you want to check out any of these podcasts, please check out Spotify and Apple Podcasts. And if you want to watch these, check out Michael Booth on Facebook. There's a section called Boothcast, and I'm sure it'll be up on Starboard Sup's Facebook page as well, and Instagram and YouTube and all the different channels that they have. So you can actually watch through the ranges and actually see what we were talking about. So Ollie, thanks so much for today, and I'll see you very soon.
Cool. Cheers, Michael. Cheers. See you soon.